Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast. I'm Ian Welsh. Joining me today is Kristen Hughes, Director of the Global Plastic Action Partnership with the World Economic Forum. Welcome to the podcast, Kristen.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Why don't you start by giving us a bit of background? What is the Global Plastic Action Partnership and why was it set up?
The Global Plastic Action Partnership is a multi-stakeholder platform that was arranged under the World Economic Forum's umbrella to address the plastic pollution crisis. As you probably know, the plastic pollution issue has really ballooned over the past decade, but we're really aiming to pull together stakeholders from government as well as private sector, civil society, academia and others, including the general public, in trying to really help address this issue. The genesis of it was really interesting because you had sort of what I often call the perfect storm, where you had Canada chairing the G7 and the UK creating the Commonwealth Clean Ocean Alliance, and the two of them connecting to say, what can we do around marine litter? In addition to that, you had some very strong consumer brands like Coca-Cola and Pepsi, who were being centered in the news because their bottles kept washing up on shore. And they too said, how do we address this? We had a unique opportunity in the World Economic Forum to pull together those governments and to bring on board the private sector, who were all looking to us to say, what is it we can do to address this? And so through that, those groups, the Coca-Cola, Pepsi, the UK, Canada, along with Nestle and Dow, crafted the Global Plastic Action Partnership. And they said, together, we think we can address this issue. So they're the founding members. We're looking to bring other members on board. But those were the ones who created the idea and the opportunity to bring together a number of different players to really address this and to scale an approach that crafts not only to address the plastic pollution issue downstream, but upstream as well. We're looking through the lens of a number of different innovations, as well as how do we also solve for the recycling, the collection and segregating issue as well.
Okay, so you've been working as the partnership for just over a year. What have been your principal achievements in the past 12 months?
We were launched at the Sustainable Development Impact Summit in New York in September 2018, but it's really actually took us about 6 months to really get some of the pieces in place. So I often feel like, yes, we've been running now for about a year. And in that time, I feel like we've been trying to build the plane whilst it was taking off. So how can we deliver some impact while we're also drafting analysis and we're doing research and building partnerships and understanding the issue a little bit more? About a year ago in Indonesia, along with the government of Indonesia, we launched the Indonesian National Plastic Action Partnership. And so really working directly with the government and others on the ground in Indonesia to run a data set analysis to understand where is the plastic pollution actually coming from when we think about the land-based solutions, and in particular, household waste, municipal-based waste, and what are some of the solutions we can craft. So in Indonesia in particular, we've actually crafted a model, building on a model that was already developed by Pew Charitable Trust, and Pew are running this model globally, and we've actually been working with them in partnership to develop it now and to run it at a national level. So we've now delivered that set of data analysis for the government of Indonesia, and from that analysis have also drafted then an action roadmap, identifying areas, hotspots that can be addressed in the short term versus the longer term, etc. And we're now in the final phase of delivering what we call an investment roadmap. So if you think about a three-pillared approach, that first pillar, really understanding, gathering data, running that research, and then through the analysis, being able to create evidence-based understandings of where that plastic pollution and waste flow is coming from. That leads then into the second pillar of what are some concrete ideas and actions that the government, that business, and that all of us in society can take in order to address this. And then the third pillar, what are the investments? What are those investable solutions that are going to be needed in order to address the second and first pillar. So in Indonesia, we're now in that third pillar phase, which is really exciting because as we've grown over the last 12 months, we've got so many people on the ground who are really inspired by this work that we've now also identified action tracks, as it were. So various task forces who are identifying very specific areas of work that have been addressed in the action plan, the National Action Roadmap. We've got an innovation action track. We've got an investment action track. We've got a policy. So all different organizations and players who are interested in these very particular aspects that have come through our 12 months of engagement, research and output in Indonesia.
It's great that you say you're using evidence-based understanding, because it strikes me that the plastics debate needs to move quickly away from an all plastic is bad type argument to a more mature one that accepts plastics are essential and that really we've just had a collection and recycling problem as much as anything else. How far do you agree with that?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. On one hand, there's certain plastics that we will see, probably we do need to find a way to minimize our use with some plastics, and we have to find a way to utilize other things. In the same time, you know, let's break away from single use, as it were, and let's try to adopt a more circular approach to utilizing plastic. A lot of plastic is necessary. It's a very lightweight, it's durable, it's very malleable and easy to use. And you think about transporting items or food safety or medicine safety, and the kinds of benefits that plastic bring are really overwhelming. However, it's our relationship with plastic that I really think needs to change. And so how can we start to institute certain behaviors that create a more circular economy approach to that plastic, right? So we're not just utilizing a use and dispose, toss away kind of mentality, but actually we're finding a way to recycle, to reuse. Look at various new business models around things like the Loop Alliance and a reuse, a refill model versus single use, one-time use, and then just chuck it.
Let's drill down a little bit into food waste issues then. So what are the essential steps to ensure that we don't move from a plastic pollution problem to a food waste problem?
Yeah, it's a really critical question and one that I think a lot of us are grappling with, because we need food grade safe plastic to be utilized for a number of areas. In particular, when we try to think about maintaining the preservation of fresh foods and as they're shipped from certain locations, you know, so there is a benefit in having that plastic. So we also, whilst we say, let's try to move away from utilizing plastic, are there innovative materials that won't be as damaging to the environment than the single-use wrap kind of plastic that we utilize today? So you think about the film that a lot of courgettes are wrapped in, or tomatoes or what have you. So are there other things? And again, let's question whether or not certain plastic is needed in the food industry. Sometimes we see it in the supermarkets where maybe there's another way for us to go about that. However, I'd also caution on the first off the bat saying, oh, plastic is bad, and then we move away from plastic. We may actually end up in something that's far more damaging to the environment. So we also want to really be thoughtful and not just have knee-jerk reactions when it comes to implementing new solutions.
Your key regional programs are in Vietnam, Indonesia, and Ghana. You've talked about Indonesia. Why are you in Vietnam? What are you doing there? And why is Vietnam important?
When I was talking about the first year, I focused on Indonesia as a case study to really identify the three main pillars that we see as important in trying to address this issue. And as we look to approach various governments and working with these countries to implement those three pillars, Ghana was the second country that we actually launched as a partnership back in October. The president himself actually showing up and calling it officially open, which was a very exciting day. And so Ghana, of course, a Commonwealth country, is the first African nation to come on board. And Prince Charles himself was in Ghana about a year and a half ago and in forming that partnership and relationship for us. So we're very thankful to have Ghana on board and to be able to work with them as a shining example for Africa as we look to sort of build out a circular economy alliance in Africa that's focused on plastics. So we've got a great opportunity to really build on some examples already in play. In Vietnam, we saw a great opportunity, again, the government coming to us and saying, you've got this partnership with Indonesia. What could we do in Vietnam that would be similar? And the benefit for us we saw in Vietnam is, if you've got Indonesia and Vietnam, two very strong, forward-thinking, environmentally focused governments, they can be leaders in the ASEAN region. So how can we create an ASEAN alliance, as it were, that then connects what Vietnam is looking to do and what Indonesia is already doing? Can they share best learnings? Can they leapfrog one another such that then they pull the rest of the region up with them? So we're also in conversations with Thailand. We've talked to the Philippines. We've got some partnerships and others who are talking to Malaysia. And so how can we actually pull all these players together and all the jigsaw pieces such that the total sum is greater than the parts?
And in each case, is the focus on developing effective domestic refuse collection and sorting?
Yes, indeed. I mean, one of the things we're really learning through the process is that so much of which most of the solutions will be very locally driven. And you probably even see that here at home in the UK, that you move from one borough to another borough. We have very different ways of collecting waste. And so what is it that's needed and what's recycled and all of that? So as we go into each of these countries, they are looking at their own municipal guidelines, both from a national level, but then we're also working with organizations like the World Bank, who are taking our model and then looking at building it out within regions or cities in these countries so that they can work with those cities and those regions in finding very, very specific municipally focused solutions. You start small but build up larger. So we're really trying to take a bottom-up approach while understanding that top-down as well.
Sure. And I would imagine in these locations, you're starting from a position where there's no domestic refuse collection. So it's a kind of like starting from the bottom up.
Yeah, in many places, there's very little or no refuse collection. And in some places, even like Indonesia, if you actually go and watch, you can see some of these massive, massive landfills. Well, we're also trying to help them understand, are the landfills being managed appropriately? Are they close to a river? Could they be managed in a way that would be also more beneficial, right? And then to your point about some of these places don't even have some of the controls in place. Well, if they have some, should we think about more? What kinds of investments will actually spur a greater impact? So do you need more collection rates and greater recycling facilities? Should there be investments in things as simple as trucks and roads and landfill, you know, just to get it started? But then at the same time, in places like Indonesia, where you have a very forward-thinking mayor in the city of Surabaya, who's putting a lot of investment into recycling and sees a huge opportunity for Indonesia in that space. So, okay, you know, that could be a tremendous opportunity, not just for Surabaya, but for Indonesia on a whole.
How do you think that the environment movement more generally can capture the public interest and concern around plastic pollution to inspire greater progress on other pressing issues, climate change being the prime example?
One of the benefits, I think, of focusing for somebody like me in my position who's focusing on plastic waste and pollution is that it's very tangible. I think we all have an opportunity to see it in everyday life, whether it's walking into the supermarkets, walking down the road. Sometimes we all see it in our gardens or the parks. You understand the relationship that you have as a consumer and as a citizen every day with plastic and the benefits of plastic, but also you see it in the polluting ways and the damage that it can cause to our environment. So I think a lot of people are already recognizing that this is something that needs to be addressed, and they see tangible opportunities as individuals to stop using single-use plastic, to employ the reuse water bottles versus plastic single-use bottles, coffee cups, etc. But also there's a much bigger picture here. And so when we start thinking about the shifts that we take when it comes to trying to eradicate plastic waste and pollution and to really implement circular economy solutions, we also really very much need to think about what are those other education points and how can we inspire beyond that to ensure that we're all also understanding the roles that we can play in everyday life as it comes to climate change. You know, how often are we utilizing public transport, say, versus getting in our own car? What kinds of dietary shifts could we make that might have a lower impact on the planet? Whilst I'm very, very focused on plastic and very much want that to be the front and center, I think it's very important for us to really understand that holistic approach, both from that circular economy around certain materials like plastic, food, etc., but also the other different aspects that we as humans utilize in everyday lives.
Big challenge is making the intangible more tangible, I guess. That is the big problem that we're all facing. For now, though, Kristen Hughes, Director of the Global Plastic Action Partnership, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ian.